The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by Eno, the Capital One Assistant. What's in your wallet?
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
When will you be ready to return to life as normal? I'm not talking about when politicians tell you we'll be okay. I'm not talking about when sports leagues resume regular activities. I'm talking about when you decide to go back to life as normal. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. And you can answer that question at 888-729-3776. They're coming for my boy Dak today. From Stephen A. Smith to Dan Orlovsky. From a party he reportedly threw over the weekend for Ezekiel Elliott to a trade. From the Dallas Cowboys to bring in another quarterback to replace Dak Prescott. I'll take on Dan Orlovsky, Stephen A. Smith, and everyone else today on The Will Cain Show. Plus, we did our homework. What's the best buddy cop movie nominated by Nuno, Mike A., Bubba, Pat, and myself? We'll answer that in the third hour of the show. Coming up in about 45 minutes, we'll nominate last place. Who gave us the worst movie to watch over the weekend? But we start with my question. My question for you. Of course, anyone who's listened to the Will Cain Show knows I put this almost religious emphasis on seeking the truth, on getting good information, cut free from political correctness, from popularity, from ulterior motives, from whatever speaker is currently holding your attention. Rather, what is true? Because it's what's needed to make our decisions. And what I'm curious about is, when are you ready to return to life as normal? A new poll by Seton Hall up on ESPN.com suggests that 46% of the respondents think the NFL season should be delayed. That compared to 36% that believe the NFL season should kick off as normal. But a poll last week up on ESPN.com suggested that only 28% of us would be ready to return to a football stadium this fall. 72% said they would not attend a game without a vaccine to the coronavirus. And that's why I asked the question, when are you ready to return to normal? I asked Nuno, I asked Bubba, I asked Mike A. in our pre-show meeting today. I said, when would you be ready to get back on an airplane? When would you be ready to get back into a stadium? When would you be ready to return to life? Each of them had their various answers. And most of them, by the way, suggested not anytime soon. Mike A. and Nuno, I think, found themselves with the majority here. Not ready to return to full stadiums, not ready to hop on an airplane, not ready to return to a theme park until there's some assurances for the safety of our health. And that led me to this. I asked the fellas, and I'm asking you now, do you know anyone who has suffered greatly from coronavirus? I'm not doubting it, obviously. What I'm saying is, has anyone close to you not gotten sick? I know those who have gotten sick, but gotten sick, required hospitalization, been put on a ventilator. Does anyone, or do most of us, know anyone in those situations? I can speak for everybody here on the show, and although we might know somebody who got sick, we can't answer the question in the affirmative. We cannot say yes. We know someone who's lived those horror stories we've read about on the news. Which means the extreme actions we've taken, while righteous, are also predicated on a theory, an idea, one degree more of separation, stories we're told. I'm not doubting it. I want you to understand what I'm saying. I'm saying that our lives have been upended. We individually have made extreme decisions. Not right or wrong is the point, but removed most of us from direct contact to the consequences of the coronavirus. So what I'm saying is, 4 weeks into this thing, 4 weeks after Rudy Gobert tests positive and the NBA shuts down, and our country then cycles into rolling shutdowns, not just across the sports world, but across the business world, across the educational world, across every aspect of our lives, 4 weeks into that, most of it is done from stories and theory and data and science. But our individual decisions are not, for most of us, made upon our own experience. I asked you guys, Bubba, Nuno, Mike A., I asked you that question. And I think Mike A. was first up because he has an annual football trip scheduled, usually for November, with some of his buddies. I asked you, Mike A., would you be ready to get back on an airplane? And your answer was what?
I can't see it. I can't see me being ready to go back in November and get on an airplane and then go to a packed stadium.
And Liam was on our call as well, and I suggested each one of us will have our own individual factors, what our health risks are, who we're exposing ourselves to, what our risk tolerance is. But then, Nuno, you asked me a question in response to mine.
Yeah, so everyone who listens to the show knows that you left New York City and went to Tennessee. Now, what happens if in a week, 2 weeks, Tennessee says, hey, go back to normal, everything's opening up, but New York is still in the same situation they're in? Are you going to feel comfortable leaving Tennessee and going back to New York and living your regular life?
Let me add another element to that. Let me change your question to me just a little bit. What if New York says it's back to life as normal? Would I then venture back into Manhattan? Would I take my family back? Would I start doing the show again from South Street Seaport? Would I interact with the other ESPN personalities and take the subway every day to work? And my only reasonable answer to you is, I don't know. I think so. You're right, by the way. New York is every bit the calculation of standing in a stadium, be it in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, or Los Angeles, California. It's a tightly packed group of people in one place, not unlike an airplane, a constant, crowded journey that we're taking together. Be it an airplane, be it a big city, be it a stadium, when will we feel ready to go back to normal? Because the conversation that we normally have on this show, and I think in most of the sports world, is when will the commissioners of the various leagues decide to again fill stadiums with people or put games on television even in front of empty stadiums? Or if we're not talking about the commissioners and the owners of our various sports leagues, we're talking about the politicians, as we saw, who wield so much control over this last week when California Governor Gavin Newsom and Senator Dianne Feinstein exerted influence over Disney and ESPN and the UFC to cancel UFC 249. But my point is, it's not just decisions being made by politicians and commissioners and team owners. It's decisions being made by you and I. And if these polls from Seton Hall show where we are today, that only 46% of us are ready for football to kick off at a regular amount of time, and even on top of that, 72% of us won't be attending a game without a vaccine, what I'm telling you is, think how far we've come in such a short amount of time. 4 weeks. From Rudy Gobert's positive test. 4 weeks from the idea that the NCAA tournament first would not be played in front of fans and then shortly after not be played at all. 4 weeks we've rearranged our lives. 4 weeks we've changed everything. And 4 weeks, this poll suggests, I think probably at the peak of fear, the height of the crisis, at least psychologically, we're not ready to go back. But all I would suggest is, as quickly as we got into this, I kind of think as quickly we'll get out of it. 4 weeks we got to the place we are today. Fear driven, not inappropriately. I think 4 weeks of healing would probably send us back to our normal lives. I think if the authorities told us that it was an acceptable amount of risk, that everything could go back to normal, if the news cycle somewhat moved on, because most of us have not experienced this firsthand, because at best it's several degrees of separation, because none of us have seen the consequences of our choice, or very few of us have seen the direct consequences of our choice, I think very quickly that fear would subside. Nothing I'm telling you is what's right or wrong. I'm not telling you what we should do. I'm only making a guess of what we will do. And if we start to roll back to normal, my guess is, much quicker than we think, we will go back to resuming our lives. We'll go back to hopping on airplanes. We'll go back to visiting theme parks. We'll go back to filling stadiums. I believe that 72% of people wouldn't fill a stadium today. What I'm telling you is, once we move, perhaps in fits and starts, perhaps in rolling waves, perhaps in bits and pieces, back to some sense of normalcy, I will bet we heal as quickly as we were injured. I bet our psyches return to normal as quickly as they were filled with fear. I'm betting you that the numbers of people that would attend a football game in the fall are much higher than what these polls suggest today. You've heard the saying, easy come, easy go. You've heard the saying, what goes up must come down. What I'm telling you is, think how much we've changed in 4 weeks. I think we could change quickly in another 4 weeks. I think we could heal just as quickly as we've been injured. I don't know whether it's right or wrong, but I'm telling you, these polls won't reflect reality when sports resumes in the fall. That's my opening take, brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. I've already got your phone calls of when you're ready to return to normal, when you're ready to return to a stadium. Plus, everybody's coming after my boy Dak today for serious reasons, like apparently he threw a party for Ezekiel Elliott over the weekend. We'll address that. And for more lighthearted reasons, like what is Dan Orlovsky already doing with a master plan for the Cowboys that involves two, not one, but two other quarterbacks of the Dallas Cowboys? Game on. Next on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like overtipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
This is the Will Cain Show.
I say something, everybody yells, you're a moron, you're stupid, you're a troll, you're hot taking. A little time passes, everybody goes, I think that guy might have been onto something.
It's time for Accountability Bowl with our most frequent participant. Dan Orlovsky comes in for an Accountability Bowl, and it won't even be Will Cain who puts him to the test. But it is the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. My point of asking, when will you be ready to return to life as normal? When will you be ready to hop on a plane? When will you be ready to go back into a football stadium? Is not simply that I think we'll heal as quickly as we've been injured. It's not simply to point out that these polls that suggest 72% of us won't go back before a vaccine and only 46% of us are ready for football to be kicked off during its normal fall schedule. But it's also to show how important information is. I told you I almost have a religious dedication, a zealotry to this idea of we have to pursue the truth, free from agenda, free from feeling, free from popularity. The information is going to be key for all of us on when we choose to return to life as normal, not just when politicians tell us it's okay, not just when sports leagues and commissioners and owners tell us they're ready, but when we're ready to put our choices up to the test. We need the truth. We need accurate information to do just that. On Twitter, several people chime in. Mike Fowler Birkin says, I would get on a plane today. I would attend any sporting event today. And Dax, a regular listener of the Will Cain Show, says, yo, I don't know one person who has contracted the virus. I'd go to a game alone. Wouldn't take the kids at first. We're still a free country. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Dak Prescott had a rough weekend. He came in for some accountability. He came in for some punishment today on various programs across ESPN and the sports landscape, because reports from TMZ suggest Dak might have had a party over the weekend. He might have broken our social distancing norms in this day and age. He might have had a party with more than 10 people for Ezekiel Elliott. Now, there's some conflicting reports, including, I believe, the Prosper, Texas Police Department, who came and did not see any kind of verifiable violation. But still, everybody's in for Dak Prescott today. We'll talk about that a little bit later on the Will Cain Show. But on Get Up this morning, ESPN football analyst Dan Orlovsky, he had an idea on how to fix the Cowboys. Not their party plans, not Dak's social distancing issues, but rather their football issues. He had an idea of what the Dallas Cowboys should do at quarterback. And it involved the NFL draft. Here's what Orlovsky had to say.
The Dallas Cowboys, Justin Herbert, falls to number 17, and the Dallas Cowboys decide, you know what? We're going to draft Justin Herbert. We love his skill set. We'll sign Cam Newton to a 1 or 2 year deal, and then we can have the option of allowing Dak to walk or signing his franchise tag and then trading him for 2 first-round picks. They can use all that leftover money that they're going to save with drafting a young quarterback and signing a guy named Jadeveon Clowney. All of a sudden, that defense is a lot better. We know that the best chance to win soon is in the NFL right now is with a young quarterback and a good team around them. And I would love to see it happen, Greeny.
I stand corrected.
I would love to see it happen, Greeny. What is Orlovsky doing? Besides going out of his way, at this point, I would have to think Orlovsky is the guy not just going around the block, but he's taking a lap around the playground. He may swing through the other side of town, see if anything's happening on his way to making his point. He's going out of his way to troll Cowboy fans. He's going out of his way to troll me, is he not? Dan Orlovsky has, on this program and on others, agreed that Dak Prescott is a good quarterback. The Dak Prescott is even a top quarterback in the NFL. I believe the Orlovsky has even agreed that while he prefers Carson Wentz over Dak Prescott, it's not a slam dunk, that it is somewhat of a close call. Every time I push back on Dan on his hatred of Dak Prescott, on his trolling of Cowboys fandom, he suggests, what is everyone doing? I readily admit that Dak is a good quarterback. But here, he suggests Dak could be dumped or should be dumped for Justin Herbert and Cam Newton. Would he do that with his love, Carson Wentz? If it's that tight, the gap between Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz, surely he would trade Carson Wentz for the same situation because he sure stacked the deck. Let me see. It's Justin Herbert, Cam Newton, 2 first-round picks, and with the money saved, Jadeveon Clowney as well. So 5 potential impact players for Carson Wentz. Surely he would do that deal with his favorite quarterback in the NFL, right? Well, not so fast. Because in the spirit of an accountability bowl, Jalen Rose, ESPN's basketball analyst, took the mantle and asked Orlovsky not about his favorite quarterback, but maybe his second favorite quarterback. Would he do a deal like that for Matt Stafford? Here was Orlovsky.
We should, number one, allow Matthew Stafford to go somewhere after this year where he can possibly get him a championship and get in the Hall of Fame. That's what I want my Lions to do this year at the draft. Roll the dice for Tua.
Jalen. You know, I have nothing but love for you, Jalen, but this is outrageous to think about. First of all, why would you willingly pass on a quarterback or get rid of a quarterback that's a guy who has Hall of Fame in his game? Like you just said, Matthew Stafford's a Hall of Fame worthy quarterback, but let's usher him out? That's not, you don't do that as an organization. Two, this guy was playing MVP caliber football last year. If you are Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn, their head coach and general manager, you have to win now, and Tua doesn't help you win right now. You mentioned the drafting of Joey Harrington. That did not help the franchise. Andre Ware, that did not help the franchise. The last thing the Lions should do, should think moving on from Matthew Stafford is a good decision.
Is that what the kids call a cell phone? What is he talking about? There is no one that would suggest that over the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, Matthew Stafford has outplayed Dak Prescott. Now, I love Matthew Stafford. I have defended Matthew Stafford, and I have been on Dan Orlovsky's team on Matthew Stafford. But let's not pretend that Matthew Stafford has somehow proven himself to be in some untouchable category that Dak Prescott has not yet reached. And yet, when it comes to Matthew Stafford, it's unthinkable for Orlovsky to move on from him for Tua. But when it comes to Dak Prescott, you'd move on from him for Justin Herbert. This makes me think it's not honest analysis. This makes me think he's going around the block. He's going around to the other side of town. This makes me think he's trying to insult me. This makes me think he's trolling Cowboy fans. This makes me think this is not just horrendous analysis. We'll find out, because Orlovsky's going to be on the show in about 90 minutes. See what he does about his accountability bowl. That's Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Everything for less, only at Walmart. Plus, was Dak wrong to throw a party this past weekend? We'll get into that. And run, Tua, Herbert, Jordan Love, all of those guys, and what order they should go in, by ESPN football analyst Jeff Schwartz, next on The Will Cain Show.
If anyone higher up at ESPN is listening to this right now, all I'm saying is you lost a long-time listener thanks to Will Cain.
You got something for Will? Call 888-SAY-ESPN.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Grab your ripcord. Let's parachute right into this debate. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Cars, homes, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and more at progressive.com. ESPN football analyst Jeff Schwartz here on the Will Cain Show. What's up, man?
Oh, not much. Just very glad the NFL has drama and has a draft, because otherwise we would be out of luck with talking about much of anything.
We sure would. But I want to parachute right into this debate. Mike Evans, Tampa Bay Buccaneers wide receiver, tweets the following. Texas high school football is the best, and quarterback is the hardest position. So I guess Kyler Murray is the best high school player ever. Now, to that, Mecole Hardman, wide receiver for the Kansas City Chiefs, says Texas football is not the best. And to that, Dez Bryant says, love you, brother, but you are crazy. Texas by far has the best football ever. Jeff Schwartz from Los Angeles played at the University of Oregon. Now, Pac-12 analyst and noted homer, what is your response to that?
I mean, I don't. How do you judge the best high school football? Look, Texas has the best. I mean, facilities. Geez, I was in Dallas about 2 months ago. I drove by Allen's stadium. I mean, a 60,000-seat stadium. I played in like a little 200-person stadium. I mean, how do you judge the best? We used to play back when I was in high school, the Cal Florida Bowl every year, where California would put together an all-star team, Florida would put together an all-star team, and we played in January. I played in that game. That was a lot of fun, but that's one game. I don't know how you determine who the best is. I mean, Texas, I think, takes it the most serious, right? It feels like it.
It's certainly the biggest entertainment product in Texas. I would say that. Towns go out. Television stations play. Friday Night Lights wasn't just a fictional television series. It's a real book and a real movie by Buzz Bissinger. It's serious. But here's who's in the running. By most estimations, California, Texas, Florida, and I think Georgia coming close there in fourth, maybe creeping up. And I think the way it's measured, Jeff, by most people is it's five-star recruits, and then correspondingly NFL players. Where do they hail from?
That's fair. I think the NFL part of it obviously is a big deal. But, you know, if you go to another school and get developed somewhere, I mean, if you're a three-star kid in California and you go play at Oregon, Oregon makes you a pro, does California get the credit for that? I don't know. It seems kind of like the coaching staff at your school should get the credit for that. I love these debates because there is no winner, right? So if you're from California like I am, you'll say California is the best. You're from Texas, Texas is the best. If you're from Georgia, Georgia's the best. There's never a winner in this because we all have our own opinions. And this is what's great about, I think, high school sports is it can vary from state to state. I mean, California, the baseball is fantastic. Other states, they don't even play really high school baseball till later in the season. So there's never a correct answer on these. That's why they're fun debates, because they just never stop.
Let me add one more element to this. So I think I can be objective about this, even though I'm from Texas and most people know that. It is that I believe there's a lot of raw talent in Texas, but so is there in California and Florida. Development at the collegiate level in Texas, I think it's pretty fair to say, has been poor. I mean, it's not just the University of Texas, which I think anyone, even Horn fans, would admit, not developing NFL talent like they used to. But one thing that is coming out of Texas, I think more so than some Pac-12 schools, I'm talking about high school and college for that matter, more so than in Florida, is innovation. Most of our NFL passing attacks, which by the way, Patrick Mahomes is now the poster boy for, and Andy Reid, what he's developed in Kansas City, is at some point now, if you keep drawing back the lineage, it is Texas high school football with various versions of the air raid and these big passing attacks. That's where that innovation came from.
Yes, and I do think that that is definitely something that's happened at the high school level and trickles upward if you want to, you know, use Texas for that. I mean, look, Andy Reid, though, he's an interesting example because the stuff he does, the base stuff that he does is still what he's done for years, which is the West Coast offense. He added a couple wrinkles here and there for Pat Mahomes. It's all from shotgun now. So it feels like it's a right. brand new offense when in fact it's really not. If I could go find you film of him running the same plays in Green Bay or in Philly that he's doing now. It's just now with Pat Mahomes at a shotgun and they have, and he's always wanted, Joe Banner on Twitter has talked about this endlessly. He's always wanted an offense with basically interchangeable parts that can run, right? Tyreek Hill, Hardman, Sammy Watkins. They can just run and you can find cool ways to use them. And that is the college influence. It's kind of that, those motioning, those formations, but the core of its pass game is still that West Coast offense. But yes, Texas, if you look at what they've done in high school football, the innovation, I've always felt that California has been like quarterbacks, right? I mean, there's just quarterback trainers there. There's camps there and it's always been about the skill position players. The South, obviously, is about bodies. I mean, if you look at this year's draft, there is not one – no, there's one Pac-12 defensive lineman that will be taken in the first 2 days, and it's probably Bradley Knight of Utah. Otherwise, that's it. There's one other defensive tackle at Utah that will get drafted, and maybe there's a third from Utah. Like, if you look at – like that's almost it from the Pac-12 this season. Like, we just don't have – bodies that are big in the South produce. If you look at the top list of all the defensive tackles, the, you know, DNs in the country, a lot of them are from the South. They just have big bodies in the South.
Yeah, you're right. And I think California is traditionally the quarterback hotbed. USC was, is perhaps quarterback U, but that's changing. And that's the point about my innovation, because what happened with that innovation in high school football is that it allowed guys like Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield, who didn't fit prototypical standards of a quarterback, to get opportunities first at the collegiate level and then at the pro level that we didn't give to them 10 years ago. I mean, even when Baker came out, it was like, oh, is he tall enough? It's funny. 1 year later, nobody really said that stuff about Kyler. They were ready to embrace what looked like a non-traditional quarterback in terms of size.
And what's funny is when people talk about Tua, they're like, yeah, he might be a little small. And you think to yourself, well, we just had Baker get drafted and Kyler Murray. Tua's issue is the injuries, right? I mean, that's why people say the small thing is because he's been injured so much. They just revert back to saying he's just a littler guy than, you know, obviously Justin Herbert's huge or Joe Burrow's normal size, for a quarterback. So we revert back to that. But you're right. The small, and I think that's a part of the shotgun offense, right? You don't have to be under center. You don't have to be surveying the field from 3 yards deep in the pocket. You're already back there, you can see everything. If you look at Kyler Murray, I thought it was a bad talking point people had. I think he had two passes total in his last year at Oklahoma that were tipped. Like, he didn't have tipped passes. So the example of saying, hey, well, he's too small to see anything is just not true. And it obviously hasn't been true in the NFL. But yes, the innovation, and it's interesting to see kind of where we're going with offensive innovation. I feel like in college football especially, we're almost going backwards now, where we're kind of slowing the tempo down. We're getting bigger bodies in the offensive defensive lines again, and we're doing things. I mean, LSU this year was extremely pro style, right? Empty protection, 5-on-5. It wasn't like an air raid empty offense. It was just like an old school empty offense. And it's interesting to see like how we're progressing maybe back the other way a little bit in college and the NFL.
Jeff Schwartz here on the Will Cain Show. Can you hang out for one more segment?
Yeah.
I've got a couple things I want to run by you.
Sounds good.
Okay, cool. Jeff Schwartz is going to hang out with us. I want to ask him, if given the top four offensive linemen in this draft, what order would he place them in? I've got my ideas. I want to see if it passes the offensive lineman's test. Plus, we'll ask Jeff Schwartz what the best buddy cop movie is. That's all coming up on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Did you know that you can listen to the Will Cain Show on your smart speaker? Just tell it to play ESPN Radio.
Now playing ESPN Radio.
Because you have a monopoly on the truth.
Thank you.
Don't worry. More from Will Cain coming up.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
I love the NFL draft so much. I don't care how geeky it is. I love it so much that I want to rank first round offensive linemen with our offensive lineman, Jeff Schwartz, here on the Will Cain Show. In fact, because I want to rank offensive line, we're going to push back the worst buddy cop movie nominated by the five of us. Nuno, Bubba, Mike A., Pat, and myself. We did our homework over the weekend. We watched our buddy cop nominations. Who got last? Coming up 15 minutes from now here on the Will Cain Show. The first thing you did, Schwartz, when you hopped on is you started tweaking me about a game I won. Well, my team won. It was a week or two ago. ESPN replayed the 2005, 2006 technically, National Championship game, Rose Bowl, USC versus Texas. In my estimation, the greatest college football game, maybe the greatest game ever played. And, of course, Texas won the national championship. But all game long, there you are with your tweets about if Reggie Bush doesn't try that dumb lateral fumble, USC wins. You know you're just trying to make people mad.
Oh, I was. But it originally was sent to Ocho, and of course it was just directed solely at him because, you know, he is very loud on social media just like I am. And my whole point about that was the play was so unique. Think about it. How often do we get a play where a runner is in the open field like he is and just decides to literally give the ball to the other team? He just threw, it's not like the last play of the game. It's not a design pitch. Just threw the ball away, and they would have been up 14-0, and that team was really good. I didn't even think that was the best USC team that they've ever had in that era, I should say. That, you know, obviously, in the 70s, they had amazing teams. I just wanted to just troll people on Twitter that night. I thought it was a great game. I was actually at – Texas played the Rose Bowl the year before, right? They played Michigan in that game.
Played Michigan, right.
I was at that game. It was my only Rose Bowl I've ever attended. The Rose Bowl is awesome. It's my favorite bowl game. And just the setting is great, and the game seemed to always be excellent. The grass is perfect. I love the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, that Michigan game was also a Vince Young showcase, and that's my only rebuttal to you. That lateral made no sense. I don't know what, neither do you. I don't think any of us know what Reggie Bush was thinking. Has he done an interview, by the way, where he's really tried to explain what he was doing on that play? But my only point back to you is, would USC have had momentum? Yes. I think they would have gone up if they go ahead and score there. Well, it would have been 14-0 maybe.
Yeah,
it would have been a good lead, but I know this is almost like faith-based argument, but Vince had made a faith-based believer out of me at that point. From the Rose Bowl the previous year, in that game, I'm just not ready to say one fumble would have negated the Vince Young magic.
Well, that's definitely, you know, possible. But when you have a close game like it was, another 7 points for USC. Plus, I think it would have fit what they wanted to do, which was just run the football, which is what they were really good at. And, you know, Lendell White, I think Lendell White gets lost in the shuffle how good he was just because of that USC team. Man, we played them in 2007. We played them that year too. We were up 13-0 in the second quarter. They scored 45 points in a row and beat us. It was quite an experience. But the 07 team, every single player on that defense, I think, got drafted, and their backups, most back, it was, I mean, just like the talent on USC at that time, it was unbelievable. I mean, if you look at their team compared to Texas, USC was more talented, but Texas had Vince Young, and that's why they won, obviously, the title. They had that player that was that good.
There was NFL players all across both teams' rosters, and not just NFL players, Pro Bowl and All-Pro players, especially in that Texas secondary. It was just chock full of guys. But I want to move on from that with Jeff Schwartz here. He played offensive line, not just in the NFL, but the University of Oregon. I was thinking about this. We got Jets fans, Giants fans, and Cowboy fans, and Eagles fans on this show, Jeff. And one of the running debates has been, say, at number 11 for the New York Jets, receiver or offensive line? And I was thinking about if all the offensive linemen are on the board, and I don't have a ton of time here. We got like 2 or 3 minutes, but who would you take first? My thought, and I not like I'm sitting here broken down tape, but studied a little bit, read scouting reports, did a lot of stuff like that over the past couple of months. My thought is it would go like this, right? Jedrick Wills from Alabama, 1. Andrew Thomas from Georgia, 2. I'd probably go Mekhi Becton from Louisville, 3, and then Tristan Wirfs from Iowa, 4. The reason I put the first two above the second two is the second two are physical freaks and combine geniuses, and the first two, I think, played to the level you would expect. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's about right. So it's interesting of each guy kind of individually. So, you know, we know right tackles and left tackles now. You need both of them, right? But that does not mean that you can take a Jedrick Wills, in my opinion, and put him at left tackle, right? You know, I think he's a guy that is a right tackle in the NFL. So it depends on where you are with a need. So like you mentioned, you didn't mention this team, but like the Browns at 10, okay, are a great example of this because they need a left tackle. They don't need a right tackle. They just signed Conklin. So if you're looking at all four of the guys to draft, the guy right now to come in and play like immediately to play left tackle is probably Andrew Thomas from Georgia. He'd come in right now and play left tackle. If you have time to develop a guy, and that develops kind of maybe the wrong word because I think Becton will get there fast, but Mekhi Becton is the most physically gifted of all the linemen, right? He'd come in right now and play left tackle, but you might get eight games where he's kind of figuring out. I think Thomas coming right now and playing. Obviously, Wills, I think, is the most skilled technical lineman at the moment. And Tristan Wirfs, a lot of people feel he can be an all-pro level guard, kind of in the mold of Zach Martin, where you have a guy who played tackle in college, immediately put him into guard. Brandon Sheriff, I believe, was a tackle in college too, went into guard and became an all-pro. So there's a lot. Those four guys, if you are a team like the Jets and you need a lineman or a wide receiver, the draft is so deep at wide receiver that you should take the lineman there, because after those four guys that you mentioned, there's a little bit of a drop off to maybe Josh Jones and Isaiah Wilson.
Speaking of big guys from the Pac-12, Austin Jackson from USC,
yeah,
right?
I'm not very high on, but teams are much higher than I would be. I wouldn't take him until the third round. But you know, he's a good example of NFL teams haven't figured out yet, and some have, but most of them I think they haven't, and the way we scout these guys has not changed. There's less practice time in the NFL now, right? There's even less in the new CBA. Our position is a position that we need that technical work in pads, right, to improve. And I feel like teams now still draft the athletic upside guy thinking they could develop him, but there's no practice to do anymore. And Austin Jackson feels like that guy to me, just athletically so gifted, but technically not there yet. And you draft him the first round, you play him right away, and it's not going to be good.
All right, Jeff Schwartz here on the Will Cain Show. Before I go, Jeff, we're having a competition every weekend. We do our homework from a movie category. Okay. This past weekend, it was buddy cop movies. We're about to debate it. Who won? After we lose you. But before we go, just in 10 seconds or so, what's the best buddy cop movie of all time?
Beverly Hills Cop.
You think that...
I'm trying to think of the top of my head. Like, you caught me kind of off guard. That's maybe my favorite. I don't know.
I just don't know if those were truly co-equals with Eddie Murphy. You got to kind of have two co-equal guys. But Jeff Schwartz here on the Will Cain Show. Always love having you, man. Thank you.
All right. Take care, bud. Have a good one.
All right. Who nominated the worst buddy cop movie? We've got the scoreboard ready next in the Will Cain Show.
Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to the Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.